Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 13, 2021. The governor of Jonglei State says South Sudan is the best place for investment.
We're calling all the investors, not in particular sector, not in particular area, in anywhere, wherever they can invest in South Sudan, wherever they would like to invest in, we're calling them to come to South Sudan, you know, see our land, see what you can do with us, and we can see what we can do with you.
And authorities in Jonglei State hand over abductees.
Through their efforts, we have seen the results. These three children were able to be recovered from the people who abducted them, and we don't encourage this as a state.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese politician is calling on investors in the U.S. and from across Africa to invest in South Sudan. The governor of South Sudan's Jonglei State, Denay Jock Chagor, is in Washington, D.C. to attend the Equity for Africa Summit, which brings together African heads of states and politicians and connect them with American business leaders. Nabil Biagio sat down with Governor Chagor in Washington to talk about the importance of the conference and challenges of investing in South Sudan.
I believe personally that when we come to events like this, or when we deal with, so there is a significance, you know, to this conference, not only for Jonglei, but the entire country. When investor comes, you know, investor will choose where they want to invest in, all across the country. And in South Sudan, there is enormous resources all over the country, you know, in all 10 states. And so, you know, when you look at Jonglei, you know, you can do fishing, you can do, you know, all kind of invest. And so we're calling all the investors, not in particular sector, not in particular area, in anywhere, wherever they can invest in South Sudan, wherever they would like to invest in, we're calling them to come to South Sudan, you know, see our land, see what you can do with us, and we can see what we can do with you.
Well, that sounds good when you talk like that, but there are challenges all across South Sudan. Let's take your state, Jonglei, for example. Despite the resources you talk about, there are chronic problems. Insecurity is rampant in the form of gun violence, intercommunal fighting. There are natural disasters, such as devastating floods. These are problems that make the country unconducive to investment.
Well, our challenges, number one, is security within the states, and also the issue of flood right now, this national disaster, you know, it devastated our states so greatly. And so, you know, I believe that the issue of insecurity, communal violence, you know, this is a thing that we as a country, or we as a state government, you know, are up to task. We're working on it, and I believe that we will overcome that. And I also want people to not be discouraged that even here in America, there's, you know, gun violence, you know, in every country. And that never stops Americans to do investment in the U.S. And they never stop any country to pursue economic development because there is issue of insecurity. But it's up to any country, you know, every country has its own formula to deal with insecurity. And that's what we have also in South Sudan, not only Jonglei alone, you know, in all 10 states, there is this issue of communal violence, issue of insecurity here and there. And the government now is up to the task. We're working closely with the central government to make sure that soon we will carry out the disarmament, but it will be a peaceful disarmament, not, you know, forceful disarmament. Our citizen will be, you know, happy to make sure that we see a way forward where we can engage ourselves in, you know, doing things that can grow our states and grow our country.
When it comes to the issue of disarmament, there seems to be a chicken and egg problem. So if I have a cattle camp today in Jonglei State, I need weapons to protect my cattle because the government is not ensuring my protection. You cannot take away my weapons before ensuring my security. But at the same time, you say, in order to establish security, we need to start by disarming the civil population. How does that work?
Yeah, well, I see that in a way that once South Sudan government carried out disarmament, it means that South Sudan will take care of the security of every human being in our land. And so, you know, that question sometimes it comes from sometimes when people doubt what the South Sudan government can do. Okay? And I also think that it's not a fair, you know, statement where, you know, if any country on earth can protect its citizens, why not South Sudan? South Sudan is up to that. We'll do just that. And so, once we talk about disarmament, we're talking about giving that responsibility to the government of South Sudan, which, in fact, now the government of South Sudan is doing that. You know, and so we want to make sure that we do it in a way that is fair to every citizen.
As governor of Jonglei State, what are you doing right now to address the intercommunal violence between the major ethnic groups in the area, the Nuer, the Dinka, and the Murle?
Well, our strategy, or my strategy as a governor in the States, that we have to approach this peacefully. We have to approach this in a way that respects all the communities, and we have to approach it in a way that respects every ethnics, every group within our states. We have already started it right now, where we're making reconciliations between little small group, you know, big groups and things like that. There are peace conferences that are going on. There are, you know, we are putting a mechanism forward to deal with intercommunal violence. That is communal violence within the Nuer themselves, communal violence within, you know, Dinka, with us, all the tribe. And so, you know, that's the nature of when there is a war in the country, there's always all of this, you know, insecurity that are up here there. So we're working closely with our local leaders, with traditional chief, with the chief, to make sure that, you know, we bring communities together in a small peace conference where they can discuss their own problems and how to come out of it. I think if we continue doing that, we can see a way forward.
That's Dine Chago, governor of Jonglei State. He was speaking with my colleague, Nabil Biagio. Authorities in Jonglei State say they have rescued 5 people allegedly abducted from the Greater Pibor administrative area by young men suspected to be from Nyerol County. Jonglei State Minister for Peace says the abductees were traced and rescued in Nyerol recently as part of implementing the resolutions of the people-to-people peace agreement signed between Pibor and Jonglei communities. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
27-year-old Tina Nyangaru, the mother of 1-year-old baby girl, says she was abducted in Kothngor village 2 weeks after she gave birth to her baby in May last year. Nyangaru says she is anxious to return to Pibor and be reunited with her family.
I'm happy to go back and meet my relatives. It is not good being under the stranger's control. Not free to do anything or move freely. You have to follow the instruction or risk being killed. It's sad, but thank God we are here today.
Nyangaru says since she was abducted last May, she has not been able to communicate with any of her relatives. She says she does not know the whereabouts of her husband. Malual Gabriel Kohn, the Jonglei State Peace Minister, says Nyangaru, her daughter, another woman and 2 children were traced and rescued by security forces in Nyerol County. Kohn says gunmen from Nyerol and Akobo counties abducted the 5 along with other people from the Greater Pibor administrative area last May. Minister Kohn did not want to speculate on how many have been abducted, but Pibor Chief Administrator Konyi says more than 300 women and children have been abducted from Pibor areas since 2017 by Jonglei State Armed Youth. Kohn says the communities of Dinka Bor, The Murle and Nuer of Greater Jonglei have been working together to unite the women and children with their families.
Through their efforts, we have seen the results. These three children were able to be recovered from the people who abducted them, and we don't encourage this as a state. We are working closely to revitalize the agreement that was reached at the grassroots. So far, with these three children that were brought and the two mothers, we are very glad. This is a great step forward from Jonglei state side. And hopefully we will also receive our children from Pibor administrative area.
Kon says the former abductees have been handed over to Save the Children International to facilitate their safe return and reunification with their relatives in the greater Pibor administrative area. He says the Jonglei state authorities have not arrested any of the suspected abductors.
We are using a look within approach of peace. Because if you start arresting people, it will be very hard for you to trace the other children that are hidden. The only thing that we are using now is a peaceful approach. And in this peaceful approach, we look at the situation. If we start arresting people now, how will we get the other children that are in remote areas? So far, we have not conducted arrests. But hopefully, the customary laws will apply where necessary. And we believe with the local government act in place, all the necessary formalities will be followed.
Zawede Legacy from Save the Children in Jonglei State says his agency has received the five former abductees and will begin the process to unify them with their relatives in Pibor.
From our observation, they are not in a good shape, like on health. Our observation indicated some of them, especially all the three children, are malnourished. So we will assign our nutrition experts to monitor and screen and do any response so that they can recover. And also we refer them to get health support so that they are very well. And we also work with our partner in the other end in Pibor on their family tracing. Then we manage to cooperation with UNEMIS, who is providing air transports. We will facilitate their transporting back. I don't think it may take more than 1 week.
Legacy says child abductions are a clear violation of international child rights. Joshua Konyi, the chief administrator for Greater Pibor Administrative Area, welcomes the efforts by Jonglei state authorities to reunite families. Konyi says other women and children from Pibor were abducted by armed youth from Bor, Twitch East and Duke counties in 2017 and 2020 during revenge attacks in Pibor, and he is calling on authorities to trace and rescue those abductees.
We are happy about what has been done by the authorities in Jonglei State. What we are urging our brothers in Bor is to do more and collect our children that are with them. The children who are reported rescue were brought from the areas of Nuer. Now I have with me here some children from Dinka Bor. Let them collect our children and we exchange.
In January this year, the Low Nuer, Dinka Bor communities of Jonglei State and the Murle community of Greater Pibor Administrative Area held a peace conference in Juba, where they agreed to bury their differences and embrace peace. At the end of the conference, leaders from the three communities signed a document stating all abductees shall be returned and their perpetrators shall be punished. It also said compensation shall be paid to the families of those killed or injured during attacks and revenge attacks during cattle raids. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Somalia's election standoff took an odd turn Monday after a Mogadishu police commander ordered lawmakers to suspend planned talks on a way forward due to security concerns and was promptly fired. Mohamed Kahiye reports from Mogadishu.
Somalia's lower house of parliament voted overwhelmingly to extend by 2 years the term for the government of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. The special session saw 149 MPs vote in favour of the extension, with only 3 opposed. Within minutes, the upper house of parliament objected, with the speaker saying the move by the lower house is unconstitutional. However, an article in Somalia's provisional constitution gives the lower house the decision-making power over electoral matters. Either way, there is no sign that Somalia's delayed parliamentary and presidential elections will begin anytime soon. The polls, originally scheduled to start late last year, never got off the ground because of disputes between political leaders on who will control the electoral process. The talks to end the impasse ended in deadlock despite pressure from the African Union, European Union and other international partners of the Somali government. The Speaker of the Parliament, Mohamed Mursal, said Monday that lawmakers must take responsibility as representatives of the people to take decisions when the need arises. He says the current state facing the people in the country will not allow continued political impasse that resulted in the election delay. He said they represent the interest of the nation and the citizens are waiting their decision, hence the move to extend 2 years' term to plan for ballot elections. President Farmajo, whose term in office technically expired on 8 February, immediately welcomed the extension approved by the lower house. In a statement, the president urged the citizens to seize their historic chance to choose their democratic destiny. However, the members of opposition led by former Prime Minister Hassan Ali Khayre warned that the extending president's term could have negative consequences. He says that it is the right time for the Somalis to acknowledge that the decision by outgoing president regarding his illegal stay in office is leading to a dangerous path. The former PM added that history will judge the decision taken by the leaders if they are not careful. Earlier, the country's police chief Abdi Mohamed Hassan fired Mogadishu Regional Police Commander General Sadiq Omar after he tried to suspend the parliamentary session, citing security concerns. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, what are health experts doing to manufacture COVID vaccine in Africa? We have answers to that question right after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at discussions in Africa about COVID-19 vaccine. The next step in fighting this pandemic in Africa, and the next one experts say, is scaling up vaccine manufacturing on the continent. Expert met Monday to discuss how to do that. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa recently started to produce COVID-19 vaccines and currently is the only African country to do so. While Africa has reported a relatively low number of cases compared to other regions, it has seen the world's slowest rollout of vaccination campaigns. To help remedy that, experts and heads of state are gathering virtually this week to mount a complex, ambitious plan to bring more of the manufacture of vaccines to the continent. One quarter of the world's COVID-19 vaccine doses have gone into the arms of Americans. The developing world has been far less fortunate, says Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the Director General of the World Health Organization. He points out that residents of low-income countries have received less than 1% of all vaccines administered worldwide.
The pandemic has shown that global manufacturing capacity and supply chains are not sufficient to deliver vaccines and other essential health products quickly and equitably to where they are needed most. That's why building up vaccine manufacturing capacity in Africa is so important.
Economist Vera Songwe, Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, estimates that the pandemic has caused 100 million Africans to fall into poverty and the loss of 30 million jobs. If the continent can seize on medical manufacturing, she estimates that 6 million jobs can be created. And why stop at vaccines, she says.
There has been a long conversation about vaccine production. We have about 80 different variables that get into the vaccine production. So yes, Africa should produce vaccines, but the whole vaccine supply chain, syringes, plastics, containers for the vaccines, also can and should be produced on the continent. This is the very essence of the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement, as we build global supply chains and regional supply chains that allow us to do this.
Although experts are still hashing out the process for this, there is one thing they seem to agree on. It won't be quick or cheap. To fund the project, Songwe said, Africa is asking for much greater access to the International Monetary Fund's reserves. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala last month became the first African and the first woman to head the World Trade Organization. She said she's determined to prepare for the next disaster, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it makes fiscal sense.
We were not prepared for this pandemic globally. Spending billions of dollars for preparedness would have saved us trillions of dollars in response. The world is now learning how to do this better. For the next time, I'm putting in place a framework to manage the next pandemic. Africa must also prepare and think of how to do better for future crises.
Okonjo-Iweala noted this plan requires much more than time, care, and money. She says it will require changes to intellectual property laws, trade agreements, transport networks, research capabilities, and more. It's a big challenge, she said, but Africa can do it. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And here in the U.S., the Biden administration said it will not be involved in the national vaccine passport system, deferring instead to private companies to implement the mechanism for people to prove they have been vaccinated for travel and other activities. White House correspondent Patsy Widikwaswara has this report on why vaccine credentialing is a controversial issue in U.S.
Excited fans returning to New York's Yankee Stadium earlier this month for the first time since October 2019 as the new Major League Baseball season begins. They have to prove that they are coronavirus free.
Just showing the vaccination card after 14 days is good enough. Otherwise, I know people are getting tested.
This week, New York became the first state to offer a digital vaccine passport, a free app and website to prove COVID-free status either through vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio.
We've got to respect people's privacy. We got to make sure that the system is accurate. There's definitely more to be worked through. But I think they'll be part of the solution.
Private companies around the world already use digital vaccine certification in tourism, entertainment, and other industries. Several countries, including China and Israel, have launched official nationwide systems, but don't expect the U.S. to follow. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
There will be no centralized universal federal vaccinations database and no federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential.
Vaccine certification is controversial in the U.S. Some Republican governors have even issued executive orders banning them. Jeffrey Bennett teaches health and communications at Vanderbilt University.
Americans are often very skeptical of the idea of anything that might be centralized in the federal government, and they see that kind of centralization as being an affront to either privacy or to freedom.
The Biden administration is urging private entities to develop their own solutions, but will provide guidelines to meet certain standards, including accessibility and affordability. The World Health Organization is also against the idea of vaccine passports for travel between countries. WHO spokesperson Margaret Harris.
we're not certain that at this stage that the vaccine prevents transmission, and there are all those other questions, apart from the question of discrimination against people who are not able to have the vaccine for one reason or another.
While certification may help industries eager to jumpstart revenue, health experts say ultimately the answer is to simply vaccinate more people. William Schaffner is a professor of health policy at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine.
The more people who are vaccinated, if we really get to over 80%, then we don't have to worry about those vaccine passports.
Currently, about 20% of Americans are fully inoculated. With vaccine hesitancy still a factor, challenges remain for the country to reach herd immunity. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Moudou. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Tuesday. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with Kiledi Muzika with the song Anabarao. Listening to Kiledi Muzika with the song My Nguchuma. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.